You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
And hello over there, Devin.
Good morning.
And a Merry Christmas to you both, and a Merry Christmas to all our listeners, because, you know, by the time you listen to next week's and record next week's, the holiday's over. So, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Everybody's saying Merry Christmas back to us, so I thought we'd just pause.
I thought we might break into song. You know, there would, like, just be this caroling part.
Well, you know, I mean, that could work.
And I mean, it's happened on the show before.
Well, and it will be, you would hope it will be a Merry Christmas for all jazz fans this year, too. I mean, so far it's a Merry Christmas because, by darn, they beat the Golden State Warriors. But, you know, let's jump into the Jazz. Big win over the Warriors, and they are now at 15-17, and they are, by the way, no longer in 14th place, but have since moved up two spots to 12th in the West.
Isn't that funny? We're excited that they're in 12th. I didn't think the season would go this way, but I am happy they're in 12th as opposed to 14th.
The one thing I noticed, though, when I looked at the standings last night, they're up to 12th. But somehow in the last 3 days, the number one team and number two teams have extended the lead on them by, instead of 5.5, it is now to 7.5 games.
Yeah, that's what happens when Nuggets and Thunder keep winning.
Yeah. So let's talk about what has been in the last couple of weeks. And what we can, you know, we can talk about this Golden State win because huge. But let's take a look at the last couple of weeks and what's happened with the Jazz.
Well, Jazz are 6-5 over their last 11, which is a lovely way to spin it. They've been wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
They have the biggest differential between how they play in wins and how they play in losses. They don't get a lot of close games. It's like they blow people out or they get blown out. You know, I kind of thought when they crushed Miami, that was going to be a turnaround point. It was not. They lost to Magic and Rockets. But now that they've beaten the Warriors, can we use this as a turnaround point? And I think this is probably the sixth time I've said, here's a win. Can this be the turnaround point?
Right. Well, and so some people want to blame, and I've read this out there on social media, some people want to blame the inconsistency with the opening night against Golden State, where they lost in overtime to Jerebko. And so everybody thought, well, that might have just broken the Jazz back, and maybe they just haven't been themselves. Well, if you want to use that argument, then here we are. You know, Jazz beat Golden State in a close one. Is this the turning point back?
I don't buy that first Golden State thing, really, because the Jazz started 4-2. That didn't really cripple them that much. No. But then they lost 4 in a row.
Right.
So they've just been all over the place, and I've been waiting for them to get comfortable. And I think what it really comes down to is they have their overcommitment to defense. They need to get everyone as intense as Gobert on defense and just really commit to that and trust that. And then maybe more of these open shots will fall. And that happened in the Warriors game.
Yeah.
Crowder was 5 of 9. Was that what he was from 3?
Yeah, he was. He had a big night.
If we could just get stuff like that, then the Jazz would be fine. They'll blaze ahead. But the problem is that Crowder has too many 1-for-7 from 3 nights.
Now, let me ask you this, John. Is it possible that in today's NBA, the Jazz are falling too in love with the three, and when it's just not going in, they need to take the ball inside and try attacking that way before they keep jacking them up? Because it seems like they just fall in love with that shot. Even on bad nights, it's like, well, we're down. The only way we're getting back into it is with the three.
Well, even against Golden State, which is one of their better nights from three, they were 38%. You still had Rubio miss 2, Mitchell was 2 of 11 from 3. You just had Crowder and Korver able to hit them. I mean, Quinn's system is designed to get at least a third of your shots from three. And so if you have guys who can hit the three, that's going to open up your inside game. And I think the reason they haven't been able to get their inside game going is because not just the three-point shot, but the guards in general have been so inconsistent that teams know they can just pack the paint. Rudy is not getting a lot of lobs and dunks because they know the Jazz have too many personnel you can leave open. They know not to leave Ingles open. They know not to leave Mitchell open. And even then, Mitchell's shooting isn't that great, but he's always a threat. But, you know, guys like Rubio and O'Neal and these guys that just aren't hitting their shots, they know they can be more relaxed, and therefore they focus on shutting down the Jazz's inside game first. And that's been effective so far this season.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, like with Mitchell, when you're 2 of 11 from three, at what point do you stop shooting the three and try to go in and get to the foul line or even kind of hit that free throw line jumper? You know what I mean? I know that we talk a lot about how the long two is the worst shot in basketball.
But sometimes it's what you need to get in a rhythm.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is not a long two. I don't want you shooting with your foot in the line or a foot inside. But if you take two steps in and you can kind of pop that, you know, from the Jazz Note logo on the side there, that if that's a better shot for you, that it's a better shot for you. I'll take 2 points over a missed three any day.
Well, and here's the thing too. I'd like to go deeper in the numbers at some point, and I don't know how easy we can do that now, but there have been opportunities for both Ricky and say Exum, for example, this year at the rim. And if I rely on my sight alone, I would say that the rim shots for guys like Rubio and Exum have not been falling. You know, they're not making layups. They're not finishing at the rim. And I don't think it's just those two either. I think it extends beyond those two. But that's another problem, that if you want to get in a rhythm shooting, you've got to be able to hit the easy ones. And the layup sometimes is all you need to get in a rhythm. Am I right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, you cannot miss layups.
Yeah, and that's why I'd like to take a deeper dive sometime on that, because I think Ricky and Exum are the two I point to right now, but there are others. But I swear those shots at the rim have not been falling for them. Layups have been either high off the glass or have been short a lot this year, which just and maybe that goes to legs. Maybe that goes to the fact that they just haven't had a lot of time in between games, as Locke has put it, that they've been on the road a lot, so they haven't had time to get fresh legs. I don't know.
I do think schedule is some of it, just as far as there's been so much travel.
Right.
But, okay, so let's go 0 to 3 feet.
You're looking it up right now, aren't you? I love that.
I am. Well, everyone's pretty good on 0 to 3 feet, except for Tabo. Everybody's at least over 50%. But
okay.
You really should be higher.
Yeah, you should be.
Okay, so 3 to 10 feet, you know, close, kind of there. They're not very good at that. I mean, Exum is 25% from 3 to 10 feet. O'Neal's 26%. Crowder's 26%. You really need to be something more like 40% if you're 3 to 10 feet.
Right. And a lot of those, by the way, are open shots. Let's not mince words here. The Jazz have had open looks all year. They're just not falling.
See, 3 to 10 feet, a lot of those are like the running floaters and stuff.
Right.
And they're just not hitting him. In fact, you look at Mitchell, okay, he is 63% from 0 to 3 feet. 31% from 3 to 10 feet, but
ouch.
10 to 16 feet, he's 50%.
Wow.
His worst shooting other than 3-point is 3 to 10 feet. That's bizarre.
Which is in Mitchell's case, he's adapting his game and he's been adding that floater. And I don't know that floater's been consistent yet. And I think with time it will be.
Yeah, he'll get there. I'm not worried about him. There are other guys that I'm worried about if they're ever really gonna.
Well, did you say you're not worried about Mitchell? Can we put that to bed for Jazz fans and NBA fans alike? Stop it with the vitriol about Mitchell being just an inefficient, high volume, horrible scoring player. Please stop. He'll be fine.
No.
He will be fine.
He will be fine. No, right now, yes, stop. He is inefficient.
Right now he is, but
I'm not worried about him improving on that.
Well, one of our listeners and friends I saw on Twitter going back and forth with someone the other day, Tiffany, with somebody about that subject. And you know, she's a Boston Celtics fan, so she likes Tatum as well. So she's got a little love for some guys that are young guys there. But she was going back and forth with somebody, and I wanted to chime in. Do you realize that if social media was around during Michael Jordan's first few years and even later on in the NBA, I think people would go off about some of his inefficiency. I looked at his early years. Do you realize that his first year in the league as a rookie, he was shooting 17% from three-point range?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's not like people shot the three that much.
No, and he didn't take very many. No, he didn't take very many. Although as the years moved on, he did. By the time his second retirement, 98, he was shooting around 40-something percent from three. So he was shooting much better at that point in time. But he evolved his game over time. I looked at the numbers and I compared him to Mitchell just for comparison's sake, because I hate the argument that everybody's using with Mitchell right now. And I thought to myself, I looked at their numbers, compared them from their first two seasons. They're both the same age. Mitchell's the same age now as Jordan was in his second year. Jordan didn't play very much in his second year, but I still looked at their numbers and they're similar. It's like, man, would people go off on Jordan back then like they are on Mitchell now? I mean, come on.
Yeah, Mitchell's first year, his efficient field goal percentage was 50%. This year it's 46. Michael Jordan's rookie year, 51%. Second year, 46%.
Yeah, and like I said, second year, Michael didn't play very much. There were some – it looked like he sat out part of that season or something happened. I don't know, but –
must have been injuries. He only had 18 games.
Yeah, he didn't play very much. But in 18 games, his efficiency had dropped from what it was as a rookie. So, no, it's – I'm just done with this constant berating, just tearing down Mitchell. I mean, obviously he got sick of it because post-game remarks the other day, he says, you know, all these Twitter GMs and coaches, I don't worry about them. So obviously he's catching wind of it because he decides to address it in a post-game interview. To be fair, I laughed because he mentioned that his mom's always bringing it up to him.
what if, though?
What if what?
What if Mitchell becomes a Monte Ellis? That's what people talk about. That's what I keep
reading. See, I haven't seen that one, too, and I wish they'd stop.
But could it happen?
No, I don't think so. No,
I've also seen the argument that Mitchell would be much better suited as a Robin as opposed to a Batman.
John,
can you say that again?
Well, I mean, yeah, say both of those again. I think he missed both of those.
I've seen people make the comments of Mitchell is just going to be a Monte Ellis in this league. And I've seen the argument that Donovan Mitchell would be better suited as a Robin as opposed to a Batman. Look at me making a pop culture reference.
And I said no to both.
Yeah. I wouldn't say Robin to a Batman. I would say he'll be best when he's like the co-star, like the co-number one guy, which I feel like him and Rudy are developing into perfectly.
Yes. Like you're Stockton to Malone.
But I don't know. I don't think Donovan knows
how to win. Donovan got us to the second round in his rookie year. What did Monta Ellis ever do?
I like the Rudy and Mitchell pairing. I really do.
So do I.
But I feel like you need another offensive guy to take the load off of Mitchell, because when it's just not happening for him, like what we saw with Golden State, other guys stepped up.
But see, that's.
But if you had another guy that could be your other go-to guy, you know, a prime Hayward, a Paul George, you know what I mean? Someone like that. But to me, that's the missing piece.
But see, the point I'll make there is that's part of Mitchell's evolution. When Mitchell has a night like he did against Golden State, I mean, Jazz beat Golden State, so I don't know why we want to focus on that too much. But when he has nights like that, that's when instead of shooting, he looks to defer and get the ball to Gobert. And much like Stockton and Malone. You remember how that was? One of them had a bad night. The other one was fine.
Well, Mitchell did do that. Mitchell was better about his passing. you know, still a lot of missed shots, but I don't know. I'm throwing out the arguments that that I'm seeing from people and wanted to get your guys' take on it.
Right. And that's what I'm doing too. I think that's what it bodes. It's worth talking about because it's a talking point on social media right now.
Well, all you got to do is pull up the stats and compare them all to Ellis and Donovan Mitchell and realize that that's a silly comparison. Looking at it right now.
Look, we'll be fine next year when we play.
So, and last point I'll make on Donovan, I watched a few people go after this the other night, including a very good friend of mine from over at Salt City Hoops. But they talked about one of Donovan's last plays in that Golden State game where he turned it over off of his knee, which, by the way, if you rewatch the replay, it was not off of his knee. It was off of his hand. It just slipped out of his hand. But a lot of people went after him for that because they thought Quinn drew up screens for you and you chose to go away from those screens or push them off and go and take it on your own. The whole hero ball mantra. And people were mad at him for it. Do you have a problem with the way he played that play? I don't.
No, I didn't have a problem with it. I saw the argument last night over people debating over it, which was surprisingly intense.
Chances are you and I saw the same people, and you know who I'm talking about. So,
Ben and Mark went back and forth on it.
Oh, well, I didn't see them. See, it was a couple other people I saw.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And you know, Dan was one of them, and I respect Dan a lot, but I get the point he's trying to make. He's like, on a 2-for-11 night, wouldn't you want to settle into Quinn's offense? Quinn gets you a screen. Use the screen to get yourself a better shot and stop trying to push it on your own. And I get that. I do. But on the same token, if Quinn really didn't like the choice that Donovan made, don't you think Donovan would have heard about it?
Yeah, but don't you think that would have been in private?
Well, one would say yes, but how often has Dante Exum been hung out to dry in a game when he's chosen to go against something that Quinn's worked on his favor for?
Well, yeah. Dante has a shorter hook than Donovan, and there's good reason for that right now.
Right. I'm just saying, I think we probably would have heard more about that particular play and that mistake from either coach or Donovan. We haven't, which suggests to me, I don't think it's that big of a deal for Quinn either. Quinn trusts Donovan, puts the ball in his hands and says, go. And I'm okay with that. Could he have used a screen and got a better shot? Maybe, but I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's look ahead. Upcoming, we have four games coming up here in the Christmas week.
We have Portland twice. I keep looking at the schedule, and I keep waiting for the schedule to get to this easy part that we know is going to come, and it's still a bit away.
Yes.
So at Portland, but then at least it's three home games in a row, except the home games are against the Thunder, the Blazers, and the Sixers.
Oh, and mind you, the Thunder is a second night of a back-to-back. So you have Portland tonight, the day we're recording, at Portland. Then tomorrow night, back home against OKC. Mm-hmm. Then you get a two-day break. Christmas Day, they play Portland at home. And then what's the break between Christmas Day? Is it the 27th or 28th that they play Philly?
27th, yeah.
Okay. So they take a couple days off and then play Philly. So I guess you could look at the placement of the games. Other than tonight's back-to-back, you could put the placement of the games in decent situation to give them time and rest. What do you think?
Well, I'm looking at how the teams are doing. I feel pretty good about the home games. I think they have a decent chance to win all three.
Okay.
My hunch is they'll lose one, but that being on the road at Portland is tough. Portland's 12-4 at home so far this year. But when I'm looking at the road records of all those teams, I think the Jazz could win all three of them. It's just that you just got to hope the right Jazz team shows up.
Right.
Agreed. So my guess is they're going to go 2-2 this week.
I'm going 3-1, Devin.
I'm going 1-3.
Ouch.
What?
Who you got them beating?
I have them beating Portland at home on Christmas Day.
But you think they lose the other three games?
Yeah, I do. I think you go to Portland. I think they give them a fight, but it's an on the road, and we'll have to see. Portland's a good team. Then you come back to Salt Lake City, tired legs against one of the best teams in the West. I see them dropping that game, and it's just kind of a bad scheduling point.
Keep in mind the Jazz are good on a second night of a back-to-back.
You said that last time, and they lost.
That was a rarity. They are good on a second night of a back-to-back.
And they lost. So then they get a little break. They beat Portland. Then they go up against Philly. Philly, you know, doing pretty well. You have to remember Philly now has Jimmy Butler. We'll have to see. But yeah, I'm tempering my expectations. I'm gonna say 1-3. And hopefully I'm wrong and they win another game or maybe two.
I'm hopeful about Philly because it's a national game, so it's not gonna start until 8:30 Mountain. So for Philly, who's used to playing in the Eastern time zone, that could be a factor. For them, they're starting the game at 10:30.
Okay. That's helpful information. But yeah, you know, I think 1-3. I'm hoping for 2-2 or 3-1, but we'll see.
I go 3-1, and I say the loss is going to either be tonight at Portland or tomorrow against OKC. I'm hoping it's not tomorrow.
But they're good on the second night of a back-to-back, Alan.
Right, and it'll be the first Jazz game of the year that I'm going to. So I'm picking it a win because I'll be there.
Oh.
So I'll be at the OKC game, and then we're going to Christmas Day against Portland. So I'm picking both of those as a win because I'll be there. Yeah, you're not buying it. I get it.
We'll,
fine.
We'll see.
All right. Let's move on from Jazz news and notes on to NBA news and notes.
Yes. Interesting stuff going on in the NBA.
Like the trade that was, then wasn't, then was?
Yes. All of that is hilarious. First, there's so much funny going on with that. I love how the trade fell apart because they weren't sure Wicks Brooks was getting traded. But ultimately, the trade happened. Phoenix was determined to not let Ariza go to the Lakers. So they did get their trade with Washington. They got Kelly Oubre and Austin Rivers. They waived Austin Rivers. So they basically traded Ariza for Oubre, which I guess is fine since you're tanking and you want to let your veteran go somewhere and win. You want to get an asset. Oubre has been very inconsistent, but let's see what he does in a new environment. And Phoenix, even Phoenix, guess what? Phoenix has won 4 in a row. So maybe they're starting to figure things out. I don't know. And then Washington is just hilariously dysfunctional. I think Ariza will help a little bit, but really I think Washington cannot keep Wall and Beal and Porter on this team all at the same time. If they don't do anything by the trade deadline, then they've got to do something next summer because it just isn't working. People just don't like each other over there.
How much blame do you put on Scottie Brooks on this? Because I feel like he got a bad rap in this. I don't know that he deserves a lot of blame, does he?
I blame Grenfeld.
Okay. Because Scottie Brooks had a very nice tenure with OKC. So you'd have to believe he's a good enough coach to carry on in another location, and it's falling apart for him there. So I don't know that I can put much blame on him yet because I think we have a small enough sample size that how good he's been, really.
He's been good. I think Scottie has shown that he can get his team to a certain level depending on the strength of talent. Like,
right.
He had the Thunder as finals contenders every year because he knew how to maximize Durant and Westbrook.
And James Harden.
And James Harden for a while there.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City, the only reason they fired him was because he had a ton of injuries and he missed the playoffs for the first time in his entire tenure. And they just really wanted an excuse to get rid of him because they felt like they had hit a ceiling. Washington, I think the same thing's going on, but I put less blame on Brooks himself because just how the chemistry of the roster they keep putting up over there just isn't working. And Grenfeld, he's probably one of the worst GMs in the league. So they they really should just blow that up, or they're just going to consistently be a 44-win team that doesn't really go anywhere.
Look, Scotty Brooks had three MVPs on his team and couldn't win a title.
Yeah, he went up against a really good Dallas team that year, wasn't it? Right?
What do you mean that year? He had three MVPs on his team for several years and he couldn't get it done. He is not a good coach.
I'm gonna put air quotes as loosely mentioned MVPs, because James Harden, although that was James, in my opinion, some of James Harden's best basketball, even now as in Houston, I thought him coming off the bench for OKC was one of his better times. Maybe I'm
By the
alone.
Way, by that logic, that means Jerry Sloan's not that good a coach.
Did Jerry Sloan have three MVPs?
He had a guy who was a two-time MVP.
And he had another guy that you could argue deserved an MVP at least one year in his
Jerry Sloan like, had one MVP. Scotty Brooks had three.
Three.
But Jerry Sloan had two, what, legends? Are we ready to decide that Scotty Brooks guys were legends yet?
I mean, you're getting close.
Okay, fine.
Think about this. Think about this. Russell Westbrook is going to have the most triple-doubles in NBA history by the time he's done.
And James Harden will have the most free throws in NBA history.
That's also valid. And KD is one of the best scorers to ever play the game.
Sorry, I had to.
He'll be in the top 10 of all-time scoring by the time he's done, maybe even top 5.
Agreed. I had to, guys.
So, I mean, when it comes down to it, you could have three legends on one team.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
I mean, James Harden.
But the NBA has shifted in and of itself over the years, too, to be fair. I don't know. It's interesting, though, that you mentioned, John, the worst GM. This trade featured quite possibly the worst GM against the worst owner.
Yes, that's true.
Can we just touch on the mess that is Phoenix and how this is edging close to be another disaster like Seattle ended up being?
No, oh, God. Did you guys see that nice young lady?
Rip into him?
Rip into the, was it the city council meeting? Is that what it was?
Yeah, she was a councilwoman. Yeah, she let him have it. Yes, she did. Did you see that, John?
No, I didn't.
Councilwoman in Phoenix, they are sweet. I saw a tweet on it. Devin did. This lady, they recorded her, was just unloaded on the owner in this meeting.
I don't think it was the owner. I thought that she was talking to the city council and it was about them giving them like the tax breaks. And
oh, that could have been that. Yeah.
She was saying how, you know, in the time there, they haven't done anything to bring in a free agent. They haven't done anything to win. That they want the money and they're not putting a product out there. And if they want to, you know, fail as a business venture, they can do it without taxpayer dollars. She was lovely.
Yes, she was.
She was spot on with everything she said, and it was just so great to hear, you know, especially from a passionate elderly woman who's not just passionate about, you know, what's going on in her community, but you could tell she knew the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
It makes that watching that video made me the entire time even more and more grateful for the Millers. Agreed? Dev?
Yeah.
I mean, I just look at our situation, our unique situation in Utah, where we have a situation where the Millers have owned this team, where Gail puts it in a trust fund, protects it against movement like this, protects it against situations like this. And it's just a well-run organization. Can't help but be grateful for that.
You know, I'm going through box scores for Phoenix, trying to figure out how they're winning. And the combination of Ayton and Booker is like paying off well.
Yeah, but they're still the worst team in the West, aren't they?
They are, but they've won 4 in a row. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, wow.
Maybe. I mean, they were 4-24. Now they're 8-24. And I'm just going through their box scores, and it looks like they've figured something out with Ayton and Booker, because Ayton's putting up 20-10 a night. And Booker, you know, as long as he's getting his 25-30 points a night, that seems to be the key. I mean, I figured when they got Igor that this would like finally signal something changing in Phoenix. I'm still thinking they're going to finish like, you know, 22-60, but I think they're finally onto something here.
Yeah. And it'll be just like the owner to probably ruin that onto something here. I don't know.
It would be. Yeah.
I mean, the last time Phoenix was good, Steve Kerr was in the chair as the GM.
Yep.
It's been a while.
And you got me looking at what teams have been doing lately. There's some teams that are doing well that maybe we didn't expect.
Well, Denver's number one in the West. Well, we did not expect
over
that.
Over the last 10 games, Denver's 8-2, yeah. Thunder 7-3, Spurs are 7-3, which, you know, I don't think everyone expected that to happen. In the East, you've got the Bucks 7-3, Pacers 73, Celtics 8-2, so they finally put it together. The Heat 7-3, and there's one other team that's 7-3 over their last 10. Do you want to take a guess who it is?
Probably a team we didn't expect.
Brooklyn.
Yeah, we didn't expect that.
So they're still out of the playoffs, but you know, they're making moves. It'll be interesting what happens. And some teams starting to stumble a little. Raptors, 5-5 over their last 10.
And John, I see you pulling Tank Watch out of your pocket. Put that thing back, because it is not happening.
I said if they get 6 games under, they're only 2 under.
Are we talking about bringing Zion to Zion?
If they get 6 under .500, I'm pulling out Tank Watch. But they're only 2 under. One tidbit. Boston's won 8 of the last 10. One of their losses was to Phoenix.
Ooh. Well, and I'm going out here. I'm saying the Jazz are still going to get to 50 wins, and they're still going to make the playoffs. I stand by that. And you posted 538 projections. They update them daily. 538 agrees with me. So I'm sticking by it. It's staying there. 50 wins in a playoff.
Yeah, 538 put out something, I don't know, about a week ago. I retweeted it. Where they were looking at strength of schedule and how health affects everything, and when they ran the numbers on that, they had Utah coming out with 52 wins. I'm like, man, that's amazing.
And 85% to make the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh, what was I going to say? Oh, one thing Locke keeps talking about is how many of these other teams have gotten to play the 5 worst teams in the NBA. And that's Phoenix, Chicago, Atlanta, Cleveland, and New York. And I don't think we've played any of them a single time yet.
No.
And it's going to be a while, but December 29th is the first time we get one of them. We get the Knicks, and then the week after that, we get the Cavaliers. And then in our huge stretch of home games between January and February, we're going to get them a lot too. So
I'm just waiting for Rudy's tweet. We're going to be fine. I'm ready.
We're going to be fine. In fact, the Jazz get Phoenix 3 times in the last month.
Ooh, that's going to be good. Okay, so a couple other NBA notes. You know, I know what answer I'm going to get from Devin, but is Doncic the best rookie in the NBA?
So far, yeah. I mean, it's been a very exciting, competitive rookie race. I would say Doncic, yes, but Ayton's been looking really good. There's been a lot of rookies who are having decent years. I think Luka's going to win it, but it's not like he's the only one doing well.
But he's doing well on a team that's doing really well.
That's key. Dallas is 15-15 right now.
Although in the case of Dallas, you want to talk about inconsistency. There's a team that's the worst road team in the NBA, but also the best home record in the NBA.
Oh, it's like Jazz in the 80s.
So, yeah, I mean, they've lost 3 at home, but, oh, they are just awful on the road. So, but Doncic has been a large part of it. In fact, he's garnered a lot of attention of late. He's been playing extremely well. Devin, who was your Rookie of the Year pick before we started the season?
I'm like 99% sure it was Luka.
Okay, that's why I figured if I brought him up, you'd be on board on that one. He has just been on fire.
Yeah, career high 32 points in a loss last night. But,
yeah,
you know, he puts up good numbers, and it's not just scoring. He seems to do it all.
And somebody on Twitter last night said, Doncic is the best rookie since LeBron James.
Let's calm down now.
That's what I said. I saw a few people say it last night. I says, oh, you guys must be Mavs fans. Okay, we'll stop there.
Yeah, you can be, I mean, let's calm down.
Agreed.
But I mean, yeah, he is really good. He's their leading scorer. He's, in fact, you could argue his impact is Donovan-like, really.
Yes.
Change the culture of the team. I mean, Jazz didn't need a culture change. They just needed someone to pick up the slack when Hayward went away, and Mitchell did more than that. Now I'm trying to find our rookie picks. Got to be in here somewhere. Okay, is this it? Yes. Devin picked Doncic, as did I. Alan picked Ayton. We all had Doncic and Ayton as our one and two. Devin and I had Doncic number one, and Alan had Doncic number two.
Okay. All right, other notes.
And that's fair, because those are the top two rookies right now.
Agreed. Other news I'll throw in there real quick. Devin, I don't know if I'm touching on quick hits at all, but last night, Steven Adams had a little situation in a game where he ended up saving Plumlee from something that would have been disastrous. That made the Twitter trends late last night. It was a play where Steven Adams faked to go up. Plumlee went up, ended up riding over top his shoulders and was going to land pretty hard on the floor. And Steven Adams reached his arm out and caught him from behind and helped him settle to the floor. It was a big trending topic last night. Kind of an interesting thing to see from. And I watched the replay, and wow, Steven Adams did everything he could to make sure that Plumlee did not land wrong. It was kind of interesting to see. So kudos, Steven Adams.
Yeah. Kudos to Aquaman, Steven Adams.
Yeah, right. And then one final NBA news and note, express.co.uk is trending right now with an article, brief, albeit, Kevin Durant in conflict with Steve Kerr after the Warriors lost to the Jazz. One of the things they talked about is apparently Steve Kerr did not like the way that Kevin Durant was playing down the stretch against the Jazz, wanted more passing, and Kevin Durant said, nobody else is making shots. Somebody had to, so why do I need to pass the ball more? And there was apparently a bit of an argument that ensued between the two of them, some sort of conflict. Don't know how true it is, but it's something I saw.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we can look too much into that, although it's interesting that the Warriors are making some headlines with some disagreements amongst the players and even the coaches. And I'm wondering if they're under the microscope even more now than ever before. And what is this the beginning of the end for the Warriors?
I wouldn't make much about it.
Okay.
I mean, think about
it.
This would be coming from a bigger source, right? John, I mean, if this were a big deal, you'd see this on SportsCenter, you'd see this on Bleacher Report, you'd see this everywhere.
Yeah. Right.
If there was really something there.
Agreed.
Where there's smoke, maybe there's fire, but if anything, it's not much.
I mean, this is what I see happening. I see, you know, I see them winning the championship again this year. Then you have Durant and Thompson as free agents. I see Durant's going somewhere else, going, I got my three rings. I'm still not appreciated for it. And he just goes somewhere else. Not the Lakers. I just can't see him doing that. But
me either.
Anywhere else. And then trying to get a championship there and trying to get the ring there that would be as appreciated as LeBron's ring that he brought to Cleveland. And Thompson, honestly, I see Thompson re-signing. I don't see Thompson going anywhere.
Okay.
He's coming to Utah.
I hope so. But if Durant re-signs with the Warriors, who knows? Maybe Thompson does move on. But
right.
That's kind of how I see it going.
I am more and more thinking about KD in New York. You know, with Porzingis, when you get Porzingis back, if New York really tanks and they get get like Zion.
It's not a bad fit, though. Fizdale is building a nice culture there. I read a nice piece about him recently that suggests that he is working from the ground up on culture there, that he learned a lesson from Memphis and is really trying to get in touch with his players there, and I like it.
Well, I mean, think about it. If you have Porzingis, Durant, Zion, they're going to be able to get another free agent. You know, what point guard is going to be out there on the market?
Right.
You could have a very good, very good starting five next season.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. That'll do it for NBA news and notes. Let's move on to Devin's quick hits.
Let's talk college football. Utah State played North Texas last week. They whooped up on them 52-13. I don't think there's any surprise there.
Nope.
There's another football game today.
There is.
There's a potato bowl.
Yep.
Will you guys be watching?
If I can watch in black and white to avoid looking at the Smurf turf, maybe.
Ah. I hate the Smurf turf. BYU,
John,
Western
gonna,
Michigan.
John, are you going to watch?
Yeah, I'll probably watch some of it.
Don't forget the Jazz game. If it came down to it, and I had the choice between the
two. The BYU game is at 2, so.
Oh, it is at 2. Okay. Yeah, then, yeah. I'll probably watch it. I don't have much else going on this afternoon.
Okay. Who wins?
BYU.
John.
BYU.
Okay. Okay. We'll talk other football. We'll talk other college football later as we get closer to the playoff and everything else. You guys want to touch on the NFL?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look where we're at. I've played 14 games, so your standings in the AFC East: Patriots on top, 9-5, closely followed by the Dolphins, 7-7. And just let me know when you hear something here that's a surprise. I think this may be the big race here, the AFC West: Chiefs and Chargers, both at 11-3. And the Chargers will get Melvin Gordon back this week. Would have been very nice to have him last week when I needed some points in fantasy. And I happened to lose.
Fantasy matters more than anything.
It really does. When you're the reigning champ and you should win a game and suddenly everyone's injured.
There's a purse on the line, isn't there?
No, it's just pride.
Okay, fine.
It's just pride. Okay.
Yeah, I'm hoping I win the consolation bracket for the third year in a row. So
nice. Yeah, AFC North, Steelers are leading at 8-5-1. Ravens are at 8-6. And the Browns, let's just throw them in the mix. They're at 6-7-1. I don't think they'll make it, but who would have expected that from the Browns?
Yeah, you've only got, what, 2 more games? I think we're down to the last 2 games of the season, aren't you? So, no, they're not going anywhere.
Okay, AFC South, you have the Texans at 10-4, the Colts and Titans both at 8-6, and then we'll jump over to the NFC, the Cowboys.
Hold up. You mentioned surprises. The Titans, to me, might be one of the surprises of the year this year. They've played really well. Yes? Would you agree?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, they've won 3 in a row, so they're kind of back in it. The biggest surprises to me was the Chargers winning 4 in a row and now being tied for the best record in the AFC.
Right.
And the Jacksonville Jaguars, they looked really strong early, and I can't believe they just completely fell apart.
Oh, yeah. Fell down to 4-10 on the year, especially after how good they looked last year.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But similarly, I mean, if we look at the NFC East, Cowboys are leading at 8-6. The Eagles and the Redskins are both at 7-7. I expected more from the Eagles this year.
Yeah, as did I.
Yeah. Super Bowl curse.
NFC West, Rams 11-3. Behind them is the Seahawks 8-6. So Seahawks could be looking at getting in on the wild card.
And I'm going to put in a good word here that the Niners beat the Seahawks last weekend. It was a good win for them.
49ers are 4-10 on the year.
Yes, injury has just destroyed and decimated their year.
They have won 28.6% of their games.
Yes. Did I mention injuries have been their Achilles this year?
They've won 2 in a row.
What, John?
They do not want the number one pick, I guess. So.
Well, you know, I don't know. They have some glaring issues, but aside from that, again, injuries have been the biggest issue.
They were 2-10. Now they are 4-10.
Speaking of the Broncos, how are the Broncos doing?
We skipped over that. Broncos are 6-8. They've lost 2 in a row.
How convenient that the guy that's at the mic picking on me for the Niners skipped over his team.
I really don't care. It's an NFL team.
You skipped right over them. You know I see how
much,
you are.
Do you know how much NFL I've watched this year?
None.
I think I've maybe watched half of a game.
I know. I'm the same. Okay, finish with the NFC.
NFC North. Bears are leading 10-4. Vikings are 7-6-1. Did you guys expect this from the Bears? I did not.
I didn't expect it from the Vikings either.
No, I didn't, but I had no idea the Bears were going to be the number one defense this year.
Really? After the trade they pulled off, you didn't know that was going to happen?
I mean, I knew it would improve, but I didn't know it was going to make them number one.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw the turnaround for them on defense when that trade happened. But for them to be as good as they are otherwise, no, I didn't see that happening. That's crazy. And like I said, the Vikings are a surprise. A team that was so good last year, and they're mediocre right now.
And then the best team in the NFL, 12-2.
The Rams.
The New Orleans.
Oh, no, wait.
The New Orleans Saints.
I read an article the other day that they have been the best defense in the NFL over the last 3 or 4 games.
Probably.
They're on fire.
Their differential is...
It's ridiculous.
Over the 167. They are plus 167.
You know, part of that might be that 50-50 game, whatever it was against the Rams a few weeks back where it was whoever was the last team to score would win that ball game.
Now John started talking.
Point differential. I know. I know. I mean, their defense has been good, but I'm just referring to their offense alone. It's been ridiculous of late.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, who's put up the most points, right? In the NFL.
Oh.
Who?
Are you talking team or quarterback?
Team.
Because team, it's the Chiefs.
Yes. Chiefs have put up, 499 points?
Yeah.
That surprises me because I thought it would have been the Rams because the Rams have been so good offensively this year.
Rams.
I traded for Travis Kelce. How do you say his name? Their tight end.
Yeah.
He has been amazing for me.
You may win that consolation bracket, John.
Isn't it his brother that played for Niners? No, Todd Kelce. I thought he was with the Niners.
He was with the Eagles. I thought.
Oh yes, he was with the Eagles. That's right. That's what it was. He was with the Eagles. My bad.
Now I'm looking. Yeah, and the Bears. You know how many points the Bears have given up? Looks like they are the best defensive team.
How many points have they given up?
264.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah. Oh wait. No.
The Saints.
No, isn't it the Ravens or the Titans?
The Titans are at 254. The Ravens are at 253. Wow. Did not expect that.
That's an average of, we've played 14 games, right? That's an average of 18 points a game that they're allowing.
That's impressive.
Very.
Okay, that's NFL. We talked some college football. You already talked about Luka. I don't have anything else. I think we got a lot of pop culture, so we can jump to that.
All right, let's move ahead then to pop culture. John, you saw some movies.
I saw some movies. I saw Green Book.
Ooh, I'm excited to hear about that one.
That one is going to be getting a lot of award nominations. It's been nominated for Best Picture, Actor, Supporting Actor at the Golden Globes. I think SAG Awards, it had some nominations. So I would say if you want to be in on what Oscar's going to be looking at, Green Book is a very good bet. It's a really decent kind of low-key comedy drama based on true story about this Italian bouncer guy who gets a job driving Don Shirley of the Don Shirley Trio around the Deep South for his tour in 1962. I had never heard of him, but he's a really good classical musician, and So you have the culture clash going on, and you have dealing with all what the civil rights situation was in 1962. You have all that, but really the movie is going to hinge on the chemistry between the two lead actors, and it works really well. I was kind of worried about Viggo Mortensen's character from the previews. It just seemed kind of like a caricature, but in the movie he really just fits right in that role. It just comes natural and you kind of get used to it. And then Mahershala Ali, who won Best Supporting Actor last year, he's good at creating this eccentric character who's like very, very poised and very mannered, and yet he's still going through living life with the stigma of being a gay black man in 1962. So it's really worth it for that. It's one of my favorites of the year so far. Good movie.
Ali was on Jimmy Fallon last week, I think it was, and talked about filming. Said that, and one of the things I remember him talking about was how much he enjoyed working with Viggo.
Yeah,
he said that he said he was funny. He said he was so good to work with. Enjoyed filming it. It was really interesting to hear him talk about it. Said he really enjoyed filming this movie a lot.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it is just the two of them, and yeah, it's. And they're just really good together. They have very distinct characters, and it's fun watching those two personalities bounce off each other. So
I can't wait to see it.
The other one I saw was The Mule. It's directed by and starring Clint Eastwood. He decided to come out of his acting retirement for one last role, and
that's
it's
right.
Based on the true story of a 90-year-old drug mule for the cartel, and. It's the second movie this year he directed. The first one he directed was The 1517 to Paris, which I thought was awful. I thought this was a return to form for him.
What was this rated?
Mule is rated R.
Okay. This one intrigued me, though, a lot.
Yeah, it's it is really fascinating. Clint's 88 himself, so it's not like he's aging himself up that much, but he's this really wily character who kind of gets tricked into starting working for the cartel, but he makes so much money. He's like, oh, cool. And he keeps on doing it. And you've got Bradley Cooper and Michael Pena and Lawrence Fishburne and Diane Wiest and Andy Garcia and just all these big names, helping out with it. And it's a pretty just decent drama, watching another aspect of the whole, drug cartel movement between Mexico and the US, and him like getting looped into it and then just capitalizing on it.
Right.
So yeah, I like that too. I give that one 3 stars.
Okay.
So they're both good.
All right. I binge watched a show on Netflix last weekend. It was funny because I hadn't planned on watching it, and my wife, we called it up. She says, I'm interested. Let's watch it. It's called The Sinner. It's based on a novel written by a German crime author. And I can't remember the name. Anyway, it's a short 8 episodes. And it stars Jessica Biel and Bill Pullman. The premise is Jessica Biel is a mother, a wife and a mother, who has a dark past. And that dark past comes back to haunt her in this story, where Bill Pullman is an officer, a detective, who's handling her case. The first episode starts out, she kills someone on a beach. She kills a man in front of her son and everybody out in the public on the beach of this lake or something out in her town. And the 8 episodes are that of Bill Pullman, undertaking the task of trying to dig up her past a little bit and see what was going on that might have caused her to do this. Really intense show, John. I think you would enjoy this show. it's slow. You know how you get those slow shows that you're like, I want to turn it off, but no. And then you just, and then there's something that just rings you in, you know, that feel.
Yeah.
And that this show had that feeling for me. At first I was like, can I really get into this? But because it's very intense, it's very quiet. It's very, it takes its time in drawing out. Bill Pullman faces demons of his own in his own life. And this case with Jessica Biel's character actually brings out those demons, and he has to face them head on as he tries to help her. John, I recommend it. I know you said you haven't seen it. It first aired on USA Network 2 years ago. And now it's moved over to Netflix. There is a season two, but I don't know if I'll get to it, but season one, really intense show, really good show. Some violence and mature themes to it, which for a USA Network show surprised me a little bit. I would expect that from a Netflix original, if you will, but it still was very, very good.
So the author's name is Petra Hammersfar. I've never heard of her, but
yeah,
apparently that was her first big book.
I've never heard of her either, but I intend to read that book now because this show hooked me. So I'm very much wanting to pick up the book and read it. So and I forgot who directed the show too. I was looking at it earlier this morning before we came on air, but there isn't and there's not a lot of well-known actors otherwise in it. I mean, Bill Pullman and Jessica Biel are your two biggest draws, but really good, John. I highly recommend it for you, for any of our listeners. Devin, I know you get into some of the murder mystery type shows sometimes. This might be worth your time.
Definitely.
So a lot of heavy drug use too, not just violence and adult themes, but some serious, serious drug addiction and drug use in it too. So yeah, if you're into this kind of stuff, check it out. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm still trying to finish Haunting of Hill House. I've got three more episodes to go.
I need to go back and finish that one. I did start a series on Amazon Prime. You heard of Electric Dreams?
Oh, the anthology series. I did watch an episode of that.
Did you?
Yeah.
So I like the author, the guy who wrote the series, because he is the same one who wrote Minority Report. I don't know if you remember Minority Report. He's the same author.
My favorite movie of that year.
Yeah, he's the same author that wrote that book. And I can't think of his name. I was just going
to... Philip K. Dick.
Yes, thank you. So he wrote this...
Excuse me, what?
Philip K. Dick. That's his name.
Philip K. Dick.
Yes.
He's written a lot of those. His stuff, Man in the High Castle, Blade Runner, Minority Report, a lot of those sci-fi what-if scenario shows he's written stories about.
He wrote Man in the High Castle?
Yeah.
That's on Amazon Prime too, and that's a show I've been tinkering between watching. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Did you like it?
Yes, I've watched all three seasons so far. It's really good.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
And it's one of those shows where the second season is better than the first season and the third season is better than the second season.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I like Philip K. Dick. I like his work. I mean, I want to read Minority Report. I know it's a short read. From what I understand, it was a small book, a fairly short story-ish or novella type book. So I want to get into that. Yeah, a lot of them, including these Electric Dreams. But I've watched two episodes of it. Very interesting shows. The one episode, I don't know if that's the one you saw, but it was called Real Life. And it was a story about a woman who lived one life with her significant other, her wife, girlfriend, whatever it is. And really just kind of just tired of and mundane boredom of life. And her significant other says, here, put this on. And she asks her to put something on her head that takes her into an alternate VR. And this VR, she lives as a male cop. And just kind of goes through this murder investigation. And by the end of this episode, it's just one episode. And that's what these all are, is just one episode, one shots. By the end of the episode, the decision is this, which one is her real reality? And which one is the dream? And they're all futuristic science fiction stories, and it's just wild. I watched the second one and was even more hooked. So I'm going to get more into it as the week coming weeks come. Electric Dreams, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's the one I saw.
Which one? The one with her between the two realities? Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're not in order according to the way that they show up on IMDb either. So, but I go in and I watch the second one. Yeah. I mean, it's about a robot takeover kind of thing, kind of idea synopsis, but yeah, it's weird. It's cool. So Devin, any stuff you want to throw into the pop culture talk this week?
My Netflix watching has been, the show I mentioned last week, Schitt's Creek.
Yep.
I'm enjoying it. I think it's funny. The other show that I watched, though, was Spotlight. I caught that one before they took it off Netflix. I believe it's going off tomorrow.
Spotlight.
Yeah. And that's the one that won Best Picture a couple of years ago with the Boston reporters who uncovered the Catholic sex abuse scandal.
Oh, is that a series?
No. It's just a movie.
Do you like it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was very good. It was very infuriating, but I thought it was very well done. And anything that has Rachel McAdams in it, you know I'm there. So, yeah. I guess if you're bored tonight and the Jazz struggle or you're staying up late, maybe you want to watch Spotlight.
Oh, that's Mark Ruffalo and Michael
Mark
Keaton.
Mark Ruffalo,
yeah,
and Mike Keaton.
Yeah, Rachel wow. Adams,
Liv Schreiber. Yeah, Best Picture of 2016.
But time is running out, Alan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it goes off tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to miss it because I just have, yeah, anyway.
You said you were going to watch BYU play football.
Well, you had to throw that one back at me, didn't you?
I did. You've got time. But yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to stop. We want to thank you all for joining us for this week's episode of Jedi and Germs. Once again, we hope you enjoy your holidays, at least Christmas. We'll be back hopefully next week before the new year. So Merry Christmas to all of you. Thank you for being along with us each and every week. We're especially grateful for you this time of year. Devin, you were going to say something.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Let's take it out with this way, John. Are you going to join in?
No.
No.
No? Okay. Fine.
All right. Please leave us a review at your favorite podcast listening location or on Facebook and get at us on Twitter. Thank you all. We'll talk to you real soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.